I guess I could start off by thanking the organizers for the opportunity to speak here, and everyone here for sticking around until the last parallel session. So I'm going to be talking about the CGHS model and some work I've been doing with Abhay Ashikar and Madhavan Radhavarajan. So the idea is, as we've seen in cosmology, that the quantum space-time for a certain model can be much bigger than the classical space-time. So the claim is that this happens in the CGHS model also. So what is a CGHS model? Here's the action for the CGHS model. I just put it up there so you can see what it is. It's basically sort of like Einstein gravity, except there's an extra field here called the dilaton. So there's this factor of e to the minus 2 phi multiplying the Ricci scalar. And the dilaton also shows up in this combination of derivatives. Kappa is a parameter is a constant in a theory that has units of 1 upon length. So that's what the CGHS model is. It's related to the spherical symmetry reduction of dilatonic gravity, but the spherical symmetry reduction to two dimensions. And what we're going to do is we're going to study black hole solutions. So we need to add some matter to instigate a collapse. So we just add the scalar field matter F, and that's what's going to collapse and form the black hole. So we can take variations of this action to get the equations of motion. F just satisfies the free field equation. Box phi is equal to zero. The equation of motion for the dilaton, phi, is completely determined by the scalar field F. And I didn't write it down here because it's convenient for us to make this field redefinition. We define this capital phi, which is just e to the minus 2 phi. So this still has all the information about the dilaton. Theta is e to the 2 rho minus 2 phi. E to the 2 rho is just a conformal factor because we can always take the metric and write it as e to the 2 rho times the flat metric. All right, so we make this field redefinition, and then we continue with finding the equations of motion. When we vary this with respect to phi, we get one equation of motion. When we vary the action with respect to g, we get three equations of motion, another plus-minus equation, and the plus-plus and the minus-minus equations. So these first two equations are basically the fundamental equations we're going to work with. The other two we think of just as a constraint on the fields phi and theta. So we just impose those initially on two null surfaces and then just evolve from there. Okay, so as I was saying, this model contains black hole solutions. So what we do is we take the scalar field matter F, we put some initial data on right scribe minus, and send in the pulse of matter. Since F satisfies a free field equation, there's no interaction. I should say on the left-hand side we have the eta metric. Since F satisfies a free field equation, it just goes right through. But that's not what we're interested in, because the physical metric has this conformal factor here which knows about the fields. So the physical metric, we can show, if we send in a pulse of matter here, that it has generically it contains a space-like singularity. So this is what the conformal diagram looks like. The matter comes in, the singularity forms, and is an event horizon here. So the true degrees of freedom are contained in F, in the field F. Everything else is determined through the equations of motion from them. Okay, so we have a black hole solutions. What's the next thing we can do? The next thing we can do is quantum field theory on that black hole background space-time. So what happens is, we can do quantum field theory on that space-time and redo the Hawking calculation, and we can show that in this model, there's Hawking radiation emitted in this region here that reaches right scribe plus. That's calculated by making use of the trace anomaly. Basically what happens is classically the trace is zero, but in the quantum theory, its expectation value is non-vanishing, and it's determined by this combination of constants times the Ricci scalar. So we can use that and integrate the conservation law for the expectation value of the stress energy tensor to determine its components. And we get this formula for the Hawking flux. It basically starts at zero in the distant past and then rapidly approaches this constant value here. So what we get is we get Hawking radiation from at this temperature, kappa h bar upon 2 pi. So it corresponds to like a one-dimensional black body, which is all right. And then if you're not familiar with this trace anomaly calculation, then what you can do is you can do the standard Hawking calculation and prescribe a set of in modes here and out modes here and calculate the Bogle-Above transformation. Calculate the expectation value of the stress energy tensor up here and show that it's not zero and you'll get the same result. This analysis was carried out by Giddings and Nelson. So the next thing we could do, going beyond quantum field theory and curved space times, is trying to incorporate the back reaction. And I didn't put any equations on this slide because it would take me too far off course, but basically, in the mid-90s, some work was done by Lowe and Perron and Strominger. They were able to incorporate the back reaction into an effective term in the action. So they get the equations in motion for the effective action. They discretize those and then solve those numerically. So what they do there is they impose initial data on two null surfaces and then just use their numerical scheme to step it forward in time. The problem is the numerical scheme breaks down at the singularity, so this hash region here, and it also breaks down near the endpoint of a black hole evaporation. So the numerical scheme stops in this region here. But even so, they're able to show that a marginally trapped tube forms here as the matter is coming in. It starts off space-like and becomes time-like as the Hawking radiation causes the black hole to evaporate. So what happens is their scheme breaks down here near the endpoint of black hole evaporation, so they can't do anything more than that. And they say, well, the black hole's gone, so we should have a triangular wedge of Minkowski space up here. So this is the conformal diagram they get from their analysis. Okay, so the work we've done involves just quantizing the system. So we have available this whole Minkowski, this big Minkowski diamond on which to construct the quantum theory. We have the Hilbert space is the product of the Fock spaces for the F minus mode and the F plus modes. So what we can do is we can promote our fundamental equations to operator equations. So we'll just take those two equations and put hats on our fields and on the stress energy tensor here. So now in the quantum theory, these are our fundamental equations. So we want to solve these for the fields phi and theta, given those other two equations, which we take just as boundary conditions on two initial null surfaces. So an important thing to notice is that the conformal factor, this corresponds to e to the 2 rho in the quantum theory. So this conformal factor omega hat is well defined everywhere, like in that whole diamond. So even though the classical theory may have a singularity somewhere, this operator is completely well defined. So another thing I should say is that these two equations contain three unknown operators, phi, theta, and t plus minus. So ideally what we would like to be able to do is to obtain the stress energy tensor completely in terms of the dilaton and the geometry. Right now we have a couple of ideas and proposals for this, but nothing concrete yet, so this is still work in progress. So in the absence of a full solution, what can we do? So what we can do is we can try to approximate the full quantum theory through successive approximations. So what does that mean? That means what we can do is we can try bootstrapping and just try going order by order to try and approximate the full quantum theory. So the easiest thing we can do to zero for order is just say, well, on the right-hand side, I'm going to put in the eta metric, so it's just flat space. I can put in that the stress energy is zero. I can compute the expectation value of the metric operator. I need a state to calculate the expectation value in. So what I do is we can prescribe a state which is a vacuum on left scribe minus, and a coherent state peaked at the classical value of this F plus field on right scribe minus. So this is a state we use. We can calculate this expectation value, and what we get, not surprisingly, is exactly the black hole background. So this conformal diagram here. So we can go beyond that, what we call the first order, as we can take the vacuum state on left scribe minus and interpret that on the future null infinity of the black hole background. But there, future null infinity, right scribe plus, doesn't cover the entire null infinity of the eta metric. So if we interpret the vacuum state here, this null infinity, where we don't have access to the full of null infinity. So what we get is that we get a thermal state at that temperature, kappa H bar over 2 pi, which is precisely the Hawken effect. So that's comforting that we can also obtain the Hawken effect out of this. But we can go beyond that. And this is what I'm calling second order here. We can go to what we call a mean field approximation. And basically it corresponds to, in our fundamental equations, replacing all of these fields by their expectation values. Essentially what we're doing is we're ignoring fluctuations in the dilaton and the geometry, but not in the matter. So what you can notice here, the difference between this and this is that this is a closed system of equations. Here, we didn't know what T plus minus was in terms of theta and phi, but here, at this level of approximation, we can replace, we know what T plus minus, the expectation value of T plus minus is. It's determined by the trace anomaly. So the right-hand side is known here. So now we have two equations and two unknowns, the expectation values of these fields. So we can integrate these equations to obtain these expectation values. And when we do that, we obtain an agreement with an analytic solution that we can obtain just by doing asymptotic analysis near right scribe plus. So that's what my next slide is about. So what do I mean there? So what we do here is we take our metric and we expand these fields phi and theta in inverse powers of x plus. So basically, we work near right scribe plus and expand the metric in a little strip near right scribe plus. And basically, the idea is that near right scribe plus, we should have a decent control of what's going on there because the curvatures there and the fluxes there should be pretty small. So in contrast to what happened in the numerical case, they couldn't evolve past this point, but up here, in our analysis, everything should be okay in this region. So we do this, we carry out this asymptotic analysis, go into the equations of motion, and one of the equations of motion is basically the flux balance law for the bonding mass. So this just tells us that the rate of change of the bonding mass up here on right scribe plus is equal to minus the flux of Hawken radiation across scribe plus. So we have a differential equation for the components of the metric that obeys this law. And what we obtain in that analysis is that up here in this strip, the Hawken flux and the bonding mass both go to zero. So here the physical metric approaches the flat metric. So the inertial observers of the physical metric agree with the inertial observers of the eta metric. And then the statement is that right future null infinity for the physical metric agrees with right future null infinity of the eta metric. So then if we have a pure state down here on left scribe minus, it has access to the full right scribe plus. So a pure state down here evolves to a pure state up here, and so thus there's no information loss in this model. So I guess I can go to my conclusions. So to summarize, we have a quantum theory that's completely well-defined everywhere, even where the classical theory has problems at the singularity. So using this theory, to zero-forder, we recover the black hole background. to higher orders in approximation, not only do we recover the Hawking effect, but also we obtain a self-consistent system of semi-classical equations for the semi-classical metric. The right scribe plus of the semi-classical metric coincides with that of the background metric. Thus, there is no information loss. And if we interpret that pure state, the vacuum on left scribe minus on the incomplete right scribe plus of the black hole background metric, then it resembles the thermal state in the past. So that's how the Hawking effect comes about here. But when we go to the next order and the mean field approximation, we have all of right scribe plus available to us. So there's no information loss. And perhaps one of the more important things that we realize from this work is that the full quantum spacetime is much larger than the classical spacetime. The classical spacetime basically ends at the singularity. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say here.
We have time for questions. I can go to the previous slide and distinguish between the Hawking plus and the Hawking mass. If there is then, we should say that the Hawking plus goes to zero value and the Hawking mass belongs to random. Which would mean that there's some kind of random after it.
Our asymptotic analysis it leaves a possibility of having a remnant, like the Hawking flux. Yeah, so there's a possibility of having a remnant, but the completion of right scribe plus is insensitive to that. So there can be a remnant of with mass of on the order of the Planck mass still up here, but the completeness of right scribe plus here is insensitive to that. Excuse me? I'm not sure. I would have to say no, but the work done by the numerical group, they can carry out this this. So they have the semi-classical equations in here, and they can carry out their scheme down to where the mass of the black hole is pretty much of Planck size. So if we're to trust their numerical scheme, then I don't think it could be larger than the Planck mass.